Welcome to the Mental Health Janitors, where we help you clean up the mess in your head. I'm your host, Sergeant Q, and with me as always, Doc Jess.
Welcome. Thanks for being here.
All right, we have a great episode in store for you guys. We're going to talk about something that's in the news right now. It's something that's been in the news for a while. It is the Israel-Palestine conflict that has just upped the ante with Iran getting involved. Then we're going to talk about some new advancements, and we're going to answer some of the questions that you guys posed to us with this episode. So our new advancement is some of the professionals that are out there to help you with your collection that may have turned into a hoarding problem. Then we've got some really cool scripture to add to it. And then a tool for your toolbox are some of these things that are available out there that you guys can use at home to do an assessment to see if you truly have a collection of tools like I do, or if you have a hoarding problem with shoes like Jessica over here.
I barely have any shoes. That was kidding. So sexist.
No, it was. Yeah, I guess it was sexist.
I don't have a shoe problem, but that's fine.
So we'll talk about the difference between collecting and hoarding and what that looks like. Give you guys some tools to assess yourself. All right, Jess, you ready to get into it?
I'm ready to do our
cards. Oh, our cards. Yes.
All right. Cards. So
here we go.
Random teaser, word teaser, random knowledge. Is it possible for a human to lift an elephant?
If you were on the moon, yes, all of those things excluded. There's been awesome, really cool experiments in physics where you can use a pivot and a lever to lift several tons of stuff with just a very simple lever. So yes, it is possible for a human to lift an elephant.
A human could lift an elephant with a little help from their hair. A full head of hair can hold the weight of up to two elephants. So save your long clippings and you have the makings of some mighty strong rope.
Rapunzel, lift my elephant.
Well, let's move straight into our current event, Aaron.
Yes. Okay. Our current event. Our current event is this conflict that's been happening in the Middle East. And let's be real. The news hypes it up every news cycle. But this conflict has been going on since BC, since before mm-hmm. Christ hit the stage.
Yeah.
Israel and Palestine, or the Jewish people and the Muslim people, have been at war since the time of Abraham.
Yep.
And technically, they're brothers. The line of Israel and the line of Muhammad, I guess, right? Muhammad? Yeah. And Muhammad, both of them come from Abraham. Abraham is the father of many nations. Both of them claim birthright to Abraham, and there's a whole scripture thing, maybe we'll get into it a little bit later, about how that lineage takes place. So they've been fighting over this same patch of earth for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And so is it ever going to be solved? I think only when Jesus comes back is it actually truly going to be solved. But can we mitigate the risk to innocent civilians? Yes, I think we can do that.
Yeah. I was watching a worship leader who... he's pretty popular, Sean. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he goes around the United States holding these worship and revival conferences. Mm-hmm. And he has some really good friends in Tel Aviv, underground in a bunker. Mm. And he was hosting a major United prayer, live prayer for them. And so there are quite a bit of Americans or missionaries in that area too.
Yeah. In Israel, you really do. You have the Muslim sect, you have the Jewish sect and a Christian sect, and they all live right there in this very small little area. Yeah. And they all live there. They all worship there. They all understand as Jerusalem as being a very holy site for each one of them. Yeah. And so that's where a lot of this conflict arises. Now, there's always tension and conflict there, but where you see it really start to beef up is when these outsiders that don't live necessarily in Israel or Palestine, but these outsiders come in and they start creating terrorism and killing not. So these are Muslim terrorists that are coming in and doing this, but they're not just killing Jewish people. They're killing Muslims and Christians. It's indiscriminate because they're firing these rockets into the city mm-hmm. that could kill anyone that lives in this small little area. So it's not just the Jewish people that are under attack. It's actually all three. It's the Muslim, the Jewish, and the Christians that live in this space that are being affected by these outside terrorist groups coming in, saying that they want, you know, that whole land of Israel to go to Palestine, which is the only Jewish state in the world. And when you look at Muslim nations, they're everywhere, all surrounding that area. There are Muslim nations when it comes to Iraq, when it comes to Afghanistan, when it comes to Iran. You look at all of that. And a lot of part of North Africa is very Muslim. The West, the Western coast, that what they call the Ivory Coast, is all heavy influence Muslim nations, to the point where if there's a Christian village that's there, the Muslims literally will come in and just kill everyone and burn the village to the ground. And you don't have to believe me. You can just go look it up.
Yeah.
And you'll see this happens all of the time in Northern Africa.
Yeah.
All of the time, where the Muslims will come in, they'll tell people to convert, and if they don't, they literally just wipe out the entire village. You don't have to believe me. You can go look it up and you can see it for yourself. But back to Israel. And let's talk about this drone attack specifically. Do you know much about it? I have my theories about it. What do you know?
All I know is that they sent in hundreds, if not thousands, of drones. And like the knowledge and
sophistication
of Iran's military forces to send in drones that could be intercepted in time, right? We were talking in pre-show that's very psychological warfare. It was more of a, hey, we can do something about this because Israel attacked first.
Mm-hmm.
And so showing like, hey, we're not going to just have this go unnoticed. We're here, we're ready. And
so just to recap the timeline for everybody, if you haven't been paying attention, several months ago, there was a concert that was happening in Israel, and these terrorists flew these light vehicles in and massacred all these people, raped a bunch of women, took a bunch of hostages, and in retaliation, Israel launched attacks in Palestine to root out these networks of terrorists, destroyed all these tunnels, all these weapons. And so they've been on this campaign to root out all these terrorisms that we know are state-sponsored terrorists from other countries. Apparently that led back to Syria, and they launched an attack on the Syrian consulate. And that's when Iran, that was on April 1st. And then Iran, in response, they flew hundreds of these drones and some missiles into Israel, killing people indiscriminately. And so that's kind of the timeline of how we got to this drone attack. And so what I think is so interesting about this, and you alluded to it a minute ago, is the psychological warfare side of this. So there's twofold. There's an economic warfare piece and the psychological, and we'll touch on both. First, the psychological warfare. They did this. They flew these hundreds of drones in at night with lights on that could be easily identified and shot down. That shows it's more of a psychological attack. To me, somebody who's been in the military, who understands PSYOPs, who's worked in this space, they could have easily flown those drones in very low to the ground with no lights, undetectable by radar, and taken out all kinds of strategic targets, civilian targets, open markets, things like that. Very easily, they could have done mass devastation. The fact that they didn't leads more to a psychological warfare PSYOPs type operation. Because if it's flying at night and you can see all these lights, all these hundreds of lights coming in, and then explosions happening kind of indiscriminately, it's more to seed fear into the population. So they'll lose their stomach for war. That's my observation of it. What are your thoughts, Jess?
Yeah. I mean, as you know, you helped me with the words. They have a much more sophisticated force, armed forces than that. And so it makes sense to me because United States and other countries are in support of Israel. Mm-hmm. And so if they went in and did a major attack, they would be looking at some trouble. And so how do we make a statement without crossing that line and getting other countries involved? And that's kind of where my mind goes with it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a show of force saying, hey, this is what we can do. because if they wanted to create massive devastation, they really, really could have with that attack. They're very sophisticated, but that they didn't do that. I think it was more of a show of force, a posturing, mm-hmm. they call it over there. They call it saber rattling, where it's like, hey, we will go to war, but we don't want to. Because trust me, Iran doesn't want a war, especially because they know it's going to be fought in their land. And so they don't want that, especially with the nuclear powers that we have that bring to bear. And just the ability that the U.S. has to hit long range targets, it's far superior to anything that they have. So that's number one, psychological. And number two is more economic warfare. And so hear me out. One of these drones maybe costs $500. $500, couple hundred drones, $500. They're into this thing. Every one of those missiles is like $1 million. These missile systems. So think about how the Iron Dome, I don't know if it's a million, maybe it's 100,000, but still, even if it's $100,000 for one of these Iron Dome missiles.
Yeah, versus a $500
drone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You look at how quickly you will deplete somebody's economic reserves fighting a war like that. That's true attrition warfare in the economic space right there. That's not a sustainable model to defend against these drones. So on an economic standpoint, that would give me pause if I was Israel. Like, wait a minute. Economically, this could bury us very quickly because they could send a couple hundred drones in every single day. And very quickly, you're going to deplete that missile system and deplete the resources to be able to build and maintain those very, very quickly.
Yeah. Interesting way to think about it.
It is. And when these types of things used to really get me hot under the collar. I used to really get worked up about this stuff. And it's taken me a very long time to get to a place in my mental health where I can look at it more objectively instead of emotionally. And I can start to see bigger things at play. And so that's my advice to all of you. Some of you have friends and family over there. Some of you have been in that country. Some of you have, fought in these other battle spaces over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so it's very easy to correlate your trauma with what is happening there. Very easy to do that, but don't.
Yeah. Which is interesting because this is episode 3 of 4 on talking about trauma and PTSD.
Right.
And so this is a very timely current event that goes along with our 4-episode topic of PTSD.
Yeah, absolutely. Because these things are trigger moments in our life. We see these things, we hear these things, and it causes that stuff to rise up. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be combat related. And we won't talk about this episode, but maybe next episode we'll get into it. I had an experience that caused me to some anxiety. And luckily you were just happened to be in the office doing some paperwork and I was able to go to Jess and talk to her about it. We won't talk about that here, but any of these things, these little triggers that pop up, you got to go talk to somebody. So if you're feeling that stress and you're feeling that uneasiness, go talk to a friend about it. Don't just let it fester. It's just going to get worse.
And if you stay tuned for next episode, we're going to have some actually really great tools to how to counteract PTSD attacks or anxiety attacks that are surrounded by hypervigilance, anxiety, things like that. So definitely make sure you catch next week's episode as well.
Awesome. Well, let's move past our current event and let's get into our new advancements.
Let's talk about this new advancement, Q.
So new advancement. And so the reason that we brought this new advancement up, we even researched this, is we had a question from one of our viewers, and maybe Casey will throw it up on the screen so you guys can read it, or at least a portion of it. But basically the question came down to this. There was a gentleman who reached out to us when we were talking about clutter months ago on our clutter episode. And he says, well, I don't have clutter. I'm not a hoarder, but I have these collections. And we're not here to make a judgment. Maybe he does have collections, but he did ask for some advice on how do I not just manage this, but manage more of the conversation around these are things that I collect because then I turn around and resell them.
And how do I reconcile the difference between what somebody might view as clutter and what I might view as collectibles and valuable, because specifically this viewer is 100% disabled veteran, trauma, anxiety, and it seems to be wanting to make some money on some of these collectibles. And so how do we reconcile, okay, I need these things to help make money to support my family as a disabled veteran, and reconcile also my wife is a minimalist and the clutter bothers her.
Right. Yeah. And so we're not here to make a judgment. There's no way that we could, based on the very limited information that we have. This would take months of counseling with Jess before she would be able to make a determination on where this guy is at. But because this got brought up, and I'm sure there for whatever reason, he was brave enough to ask these questions. There's probably a couple hundred of you that have the same question that didn't ask it. And so we wanted to give you guys some resources and some tools that we know can help you in this journey. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about is you can hire a professional to come in and do an assessment. And that's our tool. That's not our tool. That is our new advancement. There are trauma counselors like Jess, but she doesn't specialize in hoarding or what they call it now, challenging disorganization. That's the new term, challenging disorganization. Okay. We all watch the show Hoarders, but they don't use that term. They call it challenging disorganization. Those are the keywords to search. There are tons of professionals that specialize in this specific thing. And when I was doing research, oh, go ahead, Jess.
I didn't realize that they changed the name to challenging disorganization. Is it because it's less offensive?
I guess.
Hoarder has a challenging
A negative connotation.
Interesting.
There was this book that was written called 1984, and they talked about this. It was called Newspeak, where these words don't mean what they mean anymore. They mean something different. And I feel like in America, I'm going on a tangent, but it's okay. In America, we are so hell-bent on political correctness and changing these verbs and these nouns to mean things that they don't mean. And it's
so just that nobody crazy. Is offended. I'm offended that you're changing the daggone word.
Yes. And so I'm going to ruffle a lot of feathers, but it's okay because this is my opinion. Latinx does not exist. That is not a term that is widely accepted by the Hispanic community, which I am a part of. If you want more gender inclusive language to talk about Mexicans or Hispanics, call us Hispanics. It's perfect. You don't have to make up a whole new word to describe Latinos or Latinas. They want to call it Latinx because it's more inclusive. That is a made up word. It does not exist. Use Hispanic. If you want to use a gender neutral term, use Hispanic. It's fine. It works. But don't create a new word and then interject it into my culture and then tell me that I have to utilize it. No, bro, like we're going to square up.
And that's where I come in. Let's do some emotional regulation, Sergeant Q. Stay tuned.
So that kind of stuff, all this new speak, but that's what they're talking about. So
the new advancement is ICD, International Challenging Disorganization. And you can hire a professional through them to come in and is this where we got this?
Yes, that's where
we got that. Just have Casey put this quick little cheat sheet up. And what it is, it's Clutter Hoarding Scale, CHS, quick reference guide. And it's this diagram and you guys can see it up there. There's structure and zoning, animal and pets, household functions, health and safety, PPE, personal protective equipment, and then five different levels. So like you can find where you're at on this CHSR diagram. And so one example would be animal and pets level 3 is animal population exceeds local regulations, inappropriate animal control, inadequate sanitation, audible evidence of pests, medium level of spiders, light insect infestations such as bed bugs, lice, fleas, roaches, ants, silverfish, spiders. So that would be a level 3 hoarder.
That seems like a level 5. That's a level 3? I don't even want to know.
Wait, I don't want to know either.
I don't want to know. So there's a scale here you can look at. There are professionals that literally do this. There's a super popular lady that we talked about that was on Facebook and TikTok. No, she was on TikTok. She wrote a book. Remember, does this item bring you joy?
Oh, yeah. What's the lady on Netflix.
What's she called? Oh, is it Netflix?
Netflix. She's a video. Yeah. I followed her. She helped me declutter my house.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
I bring you joy. And she teaches you how to trifold your clothes and be organized. It's lovely. I would suggest it.
There are so many people out there that are professionals like her that can help you understand where you're at. And then if you need, they can provide services to help you regulate this collection that may have gotten a little excessive into hoarding. And again, with this viewer who mentioned it, we don't know what his situation is. And so we're not making a judgment call here. We're just saying for anybody else that's listening, here are some resources that can help you. Oh, here we go. She's brought out the big book of knowledge.
Well, and I was looking actually for a book that I will maybe try to find the link of. It's called Clutter Free with Kids. And it's actually really good to learn. I'll do this on one of our breaks. Sorry. I was going to look up the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental health disorders, the DSM-5.
Do it right now.
So much later that the old narrator got tired of waiting and they had to hire a new one.
Oh my God. I nailed it.
What did I go to school for?
You got to put that part in, Casey.
Oh, I am.
Okay. Oh, diagnostic criteria for hoarding disorder. Should I read it?
Yes.
All right, let's go. Diagnostic criteria in the DSM is persistent difficulty discarding or parting with possessions, regardless of their actual value. This difficulty is due to a perceived need to save the item and to distress associated with discarding them. The difficulty discarding possessions results in the accumulation of possessions that congest and clutter active living areas and substantially compromise their intended use. If living areas are uncluttered, it is only because the interventions of third parties, example, family members, cleaners, authorities. D, the hoarding causes clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning, including maintaining a safe environment for self and others. E, the hoarding is not attributable to another medical condition, like a brain injury, cerebrovascular disease, Prader-Willis syndrome. Interesting. A brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The hoarding is not better explained by the symptom of another mental disorder. Example, obsessions in obsessive compulsive disorder, decreased energy in major depressive disorder, delusions in schizophrenia or other psychotic disorders. Specify, and there's different ways to specify the hoarding, but that's the diagnostic criteria for hoarding.
So,
or challenging disorganization. I wonder if they're going to come out with a new DSM-6.
I'm sure. So basically, if you're a collector and you really are collecting things, you know, some people collect cars, and somebody who collects cars would be like Jay Leno. He has this massive garage. All of the cars are very neat and orderly. They're washed, they're clean, they run, they're displayed very nicely in a well-lit area. Mm-hmm. There's no clutter. That is a collection. If you have 10 cars that are junk that are in your garage and in your front yard that haven't ran in 10 years, that is not a collection. That is a hoarding problem. So you can see where these things start to change. Mm-hmm. So you just have to ask yourself, are the things that I'm collecting, are they creating an unsafe space for me and my family to live in? Number one.
And people with genuine hoarding diagnostic criteria, they're not going to see
right
that item doesn't have value. Their perception is it does.
Right.
And so that's when you need to hire a third party to come in and give you some unbiased.
And the other thing is ask yourself, if this is my collection, how is it organized? Is it organized and cataloged and neat and dust-free and debris-free? That would be a collection. People collect china in a china hutch.
Mm-hmm.
And some people collect little teaspoons from different states, and it's
in
all
the
displayed really
displayed
nice
hanging.
Yes,
thing.
That is a collection.
Or I know somebody who collects old phones,
but they're displayed.
But
very
they're not all piled up in a box,
right?
Saying, "Oh, it's clean and it's a visual candy."
Right.
Eye candy.
Another thing you can look at is if you are collecting these and you're selling them, and this is a business. Is it actually a business? Are you getting a profit? Or are you just calling it a business so you can buy more of these things and collect them, but you're not? There's no output. There's no profit actually being made. And you got to be real honest with yourself. Is your output greater than your input when it comes to these items? And if you're not making a profit, then it's not a business and it's just an excuse that you're using. And I don't know the answer to these questions. These are questions you have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
I think of it like this. If you're collecting things to turn around and sell, and I know people who used to do this with Beanie Babies all the time, mm-hmm. and they would make crazy 10 years ago, they'd make a bunch of money doing this. They would buy these little collections from people and then turn around and resell it for a huge profit. And that was good. And it's kind of like water. I look at it like water. Like, is your collection that you have, is it like water? Is it like a stream that's flowing in and out? Or is it just a stream that's flowing into a pond that becomes stagnant and grows and starts to stink and attract bugs? Right? That's the difference. Is this a pond or a river that you're collecting? So just think about it like that.
That's good.
And you know what I found fascinating when I was looking this stuff up is a lot of these collection turned hoarders become that way because of an unresolved trauma.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
So interesting.
That this would this hoarding situation would manifest from an unresolved trauma, which we talk about all the time. Yeah. When you experience trauma, and everybody will, if you leave it unresolved, it turns into a mental health crisis, which is what this hoarding situation becomes.
Yeah. And that's what this podcast is all about.
Yeah. Unresolved trauma is
building mental resiliency for that unresolved trauma.
Yeah. That unresolved trauma comes out in a variety of different ways.
Yeah. That's good.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, let me bring to you guys the scripture of the day.
Yes, this is a great one. This fits perfectly.
We are going to be finding it in Matthew 7:16, where it says, it's Matthew 6:16. Sorry. Matthew 6:16, in Jesus' own words, I'm reading the red letters here. And when you fast, Matthew 6:19, teaching about money and possessions, says, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be.
That's very good. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right. What's our tool and practical for today? It is the hoarding rating scale, soon to be known as challenging diagnostic scale. Yes.
50% of Americans say that they or a loved one have suffered from mental health crisis. Together, we can change all that. Introducing QActual, a revolutionary new peer-to-peer based mobile application. Personalized to fit your lifestyle. With pinpoint GPS location in times of emergency. Connecting you to your care provider. With QActual, we will move you forward. Download QActual now and visit QActual.com.
All right, so Jess, talk to us about this rating scale. So we're giving you guys tools. So if you struggle with these collections, or maybe you have a family member or friend that struggles with these collections and you think like, maybe this is a hoarding situation, maybe not. Here's a really cool tool to be able to assess and work with them and help them see the light or call in a professional. But here we go. Jess, tell us a little bit about this scale.
One thing that's important to know about scales is a lot of mental health counselors use them for different reasons to help track your progress or lack thereof. And so I use a couple scales quite a bit in my practice of people's anxiety and depression levels and PTSD levels. So there's scales like the PHQ-9, if you have a counselor and they say, don't be hesitant or worried about using those scales. They're really good tools for us to see where our clients are at or where you're at and what specific areas we can help you in. And so I believe for a counselor that specializes in the obsessive compulsive disorder of hoarding would be, and maybe that's why I like am not really comfortable touching hoarding. We were talking in pre-show and he was like, would you want to work with a hoarder? I'm like, no, not at all. He's like, ooh, I would find it really fascinating. And it's because I refer all of my OCD clients to OCD specialists. I'm not the greatest with OCD. So it's all making sense to me now. So the hoarding rating scale is 0 to 8. 0 is no problem at all. 2 is mild problem, occasionally less than weekly, acquires items not needed or acquires a few unneeded items. A 4 is going to be more moderate. It's going to be once or twice a week. 6 is going to be severe, frequently several times per week. And then 8 is extreme, often like daily. And so a couple of the questions are, because of the clutter or number of possessions, how difficult it is for you to use the rooms in your home? zero to eight. To what extent do you have difficulty discarding or recycling, selling, giving away ordinary things that other people would get rid of? My husband's going to want you to do this rating scale on me.
As you, okay, so this is wild. As you were doing that, my mind was spinning up. It was spinning up. Not you.
Your wife.
No.
Oh,
this is a person that I know. She's an older lady. She's super sweet. I've known her since I was a teenager. Really sweet lady. And she loves to go garage sailing to find treasures.
Stop. Edit this out. Tell Billy not to watch this. I love garage sailing.
To find treasures, right? And so literally, she would go out and she would buy these things and she thought they were so cool and so great. And this lady did not, she had a very immaculate clean house. She was not like your classic hoarder that you would think of. But now I'm looking, I'm like, she has a lot of these tendencies. She, very nice, well put house. Trust me, very clean, super clean. Maybe it was the OCD. I'm seeing this now because it was super clean. But she would go to garage sales and she would haggle and she would get these treasures. But the joy for her was getting this treasure and then going and telling other people what a good deal she got on this treasure. And then you would receive these as gifts for Christmas. And you're like, what am I doing with this tchotchke of these two elephants balancing a ball? Like, what am I doing with this thing? But for her, they were the greatest thing in the world. And you know why? I think she was addicted to this because it gave her a dopamine hit. She's on a treasure hunt. She called them treasures. So when she would find one of these things that she thought was a great deal and was so awesome, she was getting a hit of dopamine. And then she wants to share it with you to elevate her status, getting serotonin and looking for that oxytocin hit of being grateful.
You're counseling me today. You know why? Because I love garage sailing, thinking of all my friends with like new babies in mind. And like, I bought this like $250 Kelty hiking backpack from a garage sale for a friend who just had a baby.
Is she an avid hiker?
No, but they use it all the time when they go on walks and stuff.
Yes, I know, because
they use it all the time. It was a blessing to them, Q. Okay. And it's a dopamine hit because I get it for a killer deal and I feel like I've blessed somebody. Not for my status, but I'm like, hey, they use it all the time. You want me to have them call you?
It increases your serotonin, which elevates your, when you elevate your status in a group by giving them something that's really cool, that was at a good deal that they could use, it elevates your status in the group, giving you a hit of serotonin. It's not a negative thing. That's just how your body responds. It's okay.
Okay, Dr. Q. 100,000 followers, he's going to have to get his degree. That's it. This is where it's at. Okay. Number three, to what extent do you currently have a problem with collecting free things or buying more things that you need or can use or can afford?
Buttons have been pushed.
I need help emotionally regulating right now.
See, this show just isn't for you guys. It's for us too.
Oh gosh. Okay. Number four, to what extent do you experience emotional distress because of clutter, difficulty discarding, or problems with buying or acquiring things? Interesting. All right. To what extent do you experience impairment in your life, like your daily routines, job, school, social activities, family activities, financial difficulties, because of clutter, difficulty discarding, or problems with buying or acquiring things?
You know, it would be fun. Is, I don't know if we have time in this episode, but maybe next episode we have you actually rate yourself on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my husband would very much so appreciate that.
He tells me all the time he loves this show. I'm always sticking it to you.
All right, so interpretation of this is standard deviation.
So you're going to rate yourself and see how many points you get, basically. Yep. And depending on what points you get, it's going to tell you what these different delineations are, what it means. And so if you get a lower score, you're going to get non-clinical samples, which means that you're doing okay. If you're going to get moderate, between like 24, around 24 is the score, then that means that people are starting to have a hoarding problem. And if you get anything beyond that, then you're going to get, isn't that right? Yeah.
Criteria for clinically significant challenging now I'm liking that word more because it's not as offensive to me. Don't call me a whore, call me a challenging disorganization person. Wow. Okay.
A challenging, disorganizational individual.
Okay.
CDI.
So much better. You're CDI. I am not a hoarder.
All right. Well, that's it for the Mental Health Janitors, where we hope that we educate, empower, and encourage you on your mental health journey. I'm Sergeant Q.
And I'm Doc Jess, and we're out.
And I'm Doc Jess, and I'm
Hi, guys. Doc Jess here from the Mental Health Janitors, and I wanted to sneak in here to let you guys know about a really exciting opportunity that Sergeant Q is going to be sharing with us. He has an award-winning signature talk that he's going to be holding on Friday, May 10th at 6:30 at Faith and Victory Church. This is an incredible opportunity to get some free mental health training from one of the best. I know I'm going to be there, and I just want to invite all of you guys to be there. Make sure you guys sign up, and the link of how to sign up will be in this video. Thanks so much, you guys. Hope to see you there.